Okay, time is 7 o'clock. Time to call to order the Town of Discovery Bay regular CSD board meeting. If I can get, if you all rise and join in the pledge of allegiance. And if Mike can lead us, I'm glad to.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Give roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present.
Thank you. Okay, now it's time for public comments. This is the opportunity for anyone that's on the line with us tonight that wants to address the board. You have 3 minutes for any item that is not on the agenda. While we don't engage with you, we are listening, so please, if the moderator's on board, if we have anyone on the line that wishes to address the board.
Do you have a few minutes for the public, Chair? And members of the public, if you want to address the board, please state your name and wait to be recognized by the Chair.
Who would ever like to start, please feel free to join. Let's start.
That's fine. I'm seeing no action, Chair. We'll go ahead and proceed.
We'll close public comments and we'll move to the consent calendar. Does any of the board members have any items they wish to remove or discuss? Is there any public comments regarding the consent calendar? And then bring it back to the board for a motion.
Motion that we approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Director Graham.
Aye.
Director Callahan.
Aye.
Director Porter.
Aye.
Vice President Graves.
Aye.
President Bateau.
Aye. Consent calendar motion carries. Presentation.
Mr. President, if I may.
Yes.
We did have 3 members of the public just log in.
Oh, okay.
So it's at your discretion if you'd like to reopen public comment.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are 3 members of the public.
Well, for those of you who just joined in, I will reopen the public comments. Here's your opportunity to address the board about any item you wish that is not on the agenda. You'll have 3 minutes while the board probably will not engage. We definitely are listening, so do this. Any of the members of the public have any comments? Okay, hearing none, we'll close public comments. Any members of the public have any comments regarding the consent calendar? Hearing none, then we'll move to presentations. We'll go to the month reports. Curry.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Hello there.
Once again, this is your first report for the year of 2021. As you can see, we continue moving forward with the day safety operations, also with the working hours increasing. Right here, you got the 4 documents that were submitted to the state of California, and one especially, which is the annual biosolids report to the, now it did change, it's not going to the state of California, it's going to EPA. Right here, part of the water side, we still continue with the same wells, 1B, 2, 4, 5B on the standby, 6 and 7. Then we have the 2021 January water production at 49.7 million gallons during the month of January. Right here, during the month of January, we pull a total of 16 back tees. That means that out of those 16 back tees, nothing was identified, so we have pretty good quality of water safe to the public. Now we are transferring to the wastewater. As you can see, the numbers, the only number that I have concerned is a little call from 7-day media and the call from daily max, 2. For the last months have been no snap detected, so it's a little increase, not to the point to be panicked, but as a matter of fact, I went back years back and it showed that during the month of January, February, there's always something going on, which I'm going to have to take a look into that. Why?
Jerry, I have a question for you. Going back up to the prior right there. I see fire hydrant flushing. It's been a while since we've done that. When are we going to start that process again?
I think that you probably haven't been in the wastewater committee announcer, but we have been flushing hydrants. We started since October last year.
Okay.
So there's a few month of numbers like Village 4, Village 3. They have been flushed, and also the valves have been exercised. Right now, we're in the village, finish it up, and we're moving up to Village 4 right now.
Okay. Go ahead, that's fine, thanks.
Okay, so moving forward, we're going back to the wastewater service. As you can see, that according to the MPDS, we're still in compliance. Part of the collections, the stations, we have 15 in service. We know that we don't have no SSOs, so we're doing pretty good. And those are just terminology for you guys to get familiarized with any of the terminology that we talk about. Does anybody have any questions?
Any public comments?
Same time.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Okay, well then we'll move on to business and action items. F1.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Hi. Okay. At the October 21st Board of Directors meeting, staff was asked to research a full video conferencing system, which included software, camera, and microphone options. This system would be used for all public committee and board of director meetings as a better means to engage with the residents of Discovery Bay. At the February 3rd, 2021 internal operations meeting, staff presented their recommendation for a two-room video conferencing system and received committee approval to bring the recommended system before the board of directors. Tonight, I will present that same presentation to the full board. I will move through the presentation at a steady pace. If you have any questions, please feel free to stop me at any time. Okay? So this is a very exciting time. All right. So welcome to the first Town of Discovery Bay review of the proposed video conference system. The next slide will walk you through the selection criteria, the products reviews, and what our surrounding cities are currently doing. Joining me today on the phone, I have Ron Graham from Precision IT. They are our current IT provider. And Tiffany Bagala. Tiffany is the Director of Sales from Sandler Partners. Sandler Partners is a business partnering firm for network solutions. Ron introduced me to Tiffany when we were looking for a new office phone system. So naturally, I requested her services once again when looking into video conferencing solutions. So video conferencing software selection criteria. To enable us to select the right product for Discovery Bay, I first developed a set of criteria that was important in a software solution. And this slide kind of shows you some of the items that I looked at. Ease of use and flexibility, camera and sound system options and integration, training, support, number of attendees, cost, customer service, controls, and a two-room solution for the boardroom and the committee meeting rooms. Before you was a list of software solutions that were reviewed. Tiffany was helpful in looking for a solution that fit the list of requests or demands that I presented to her. Those options were Zoom and GoToWebinar. I also chose to look into a few more solutions to get a well-rounded view of options available. I comprised a list of pros and cons to the list above. Now, when I presented those pros and cons, Director Callahan had a great suggestion and asked me to put in a webinar solution rating. So I took my pros and cons, and I did kind of a 4-star rating. I got that idea from kind of PC Mag, you know, if you've ever looked at that. And so 4 stars being the highest rating, and then, of course, no stars or 1 star being the lowest rating. So in the future, when we look back and Penny asked us why we selected this solution, we can refer back to this sewer system. Here on slide 4, I provide a view of what our surrounding cities are currently using and doing. I have spoken to a few of my colleagues at these other agencies to understand what solution they are using and how their experience is going so far. The locations that have saved their video recordings of their meetings, I watched to see how their solutions look to the resident. The reason in doing this was to ensure that we provided a software and equipment package that is professional and understandable for the residents of Discovery Bay. Staff's recommendation for a software solution was to use GoToMeetingPro by LogMeIn. The basis for this recommendation was that this solution hit all of the criteria and then some. Their customer service and professional demonstration of their platform was absolutely amazing. They answered all of my questions and offered a full service solution for the Town of Discovery Bay's meeting needs. Here's a list of some of their features. Just to name a few that I really liked, where they support up to 1,000 attendees plus. You can do branding and logo abilities on your backgrounds. Meeting notifications, they can set up meeting notifications before our meetings. We can regulate public comments to 3 minutes. We can monitor all meeting attendees. There is an option for public engagement. So if we ever wanted to do polling or surveying, we can, and chat features, we could use those or we could turn them off. They also had very detailed reporting. Okay. So here is a list of our costs for the GoTo meeting, the GoTo webinar. For this, it's a 36-month contract at $199 a month, which is about $2,300. These costs will be shared between water, wastewater, community center, and Zone 8 and Zone 9. We're thinking water and wastewater will pay for about 80% of the annual costs, with the balance split between the community center, Zone 8, and Zone 9. Do you have any questions regarding the software? Yes, Kevin.
Dina, so we don't have a comparison cost sheet, which is fine, because I know you did that, but where does this fall in the cost of doing business? Are they all pretty much about the same?
No, they were not. So I would say Zoom was a little, with Zoom and GoToWebinar were kind of in line. So Zoom was about $1,600. This one was about $2,300. And then if you get the Granicus, which is a absolutely amazing software for government agencies, but it had limitations, that was about $18,000 a year plus equipment, and every year they increase that cost. So.
Okay. What was the cheapest? So this is down at the low, this is in the reasonable end. I don't want to say cheap, this is at the reasonable end of the cost.
Yes,
okay, thank you.
Okay. That's a quick question.
Sure.
On the webinar solution rating matrix that you created, the stars, the 1 through 4, those are your ratings based on your research, or?
That is based on my research and my pros and cons list. Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right, I will move on to video and audio equipment selection criteria. Like the software, I actually did the same thing. I created a list of criteria, and some of those items were ease of use and setup. Cost and payment options, whether it's rental, lease, or ownership. Customer service. Capabilities and functionality, video sound quality, two-room solution was important, warranty was also very important, a multi-platform system integration. I wanted to make sure if we didn't like the software or any time down the road we wanted to change, we could still use the equipment that we purchased with another software provider, and training and support. Some of the solutions that I looked at were Poly, formerly Polycom and Plantronics, FM video, Boxcast, and a multitude of standalone camera and microphone options. Yes?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
For members of the public that are listening in, can you please mute your phone? We're getting a little background noise. Thank you.
Again, I created a pros and con list, and I went over those pros and cons with the Channel Ops Committee, and I put that same list into an equipment rating. So using the same four-star rating system, I have it before you. Okay, staff's recommendation is to use the Poly Visual and Audio System. It's an all-in-one solution that integrates with the GoToWebinar platform. With that package, this is what you'll get. You will get the Poly Boardroom G7500 with the Eagle Eye 12 zoom camera, the TC8, and a Poly Studio X30 Vision. You will get two administrative controllers, one for the boardroom and one for the meeting. These were the two pricing options that for the new equipment that I presented to the internal op. It was recommended that we go with option one to purchase the equipment. Precision IT would be used there. They would buy it for us on our behalf. They have a better buying agreements out there. And so the cost is about $12,000 plus installation. And it's the same 3-year warranty as we would have gotten getting it through the wrong meeting. Again, the cost will be shared between water, wastewater, community center, zone 8 and zone 9, with water and wastewater taking 80% of the annual cost, and the balance being taken by community center, zone 8 and zone 9. I've asked Ron from Precision IT what the lead time is for the equipment. It's typically 1 to 2 weeks. Now with COVID, anything can happen. It could be longer, it could be shorter. And then Director Callahan had a great question regarding the warranty. Since Precision IT is purchasing the equipment for us, the warranty is our warranty. It is the town of Discovery Bay. It's just a pass-through purchase, and we own the warranty. Okay. Do you have any questions?
I have a quick question.
Sure.
I know that the leasing option is a little bit more expensive, but did we look at the longevity of the equipment? And if we did a lease, would we be... would that give us the option to upgrade it if needed?
Okay. Good question. So we asked that question, and Tiffany, if you could just jump in if I get this wrong. It is a leasing option, but at the end of 3 years, you own it anyways. Yeah, and so honestly, we really felt, as the committee and staff, that purchasing with us, you got the same 3-year warranty. We've already added in the capital plan within 5 years the cost of replacement just in case. Any of the equipment needs to be replaced within 5 years if it's obsolete or not working. So,
there's no advantage for $6,000 more?
Not really.
Okay.
No, they're really.
That doesn't look like it to me either.
No. So, if there aren't any more questions, staff is requesting board approval to allow the general manager to execute all contracts and purchase orders for the purchase, implementation of the recommended software, the necessary equipment, and the installation of the video conferencing system. Go ahead. Go for it.
So, our chief concern here and our main goal, our mission, is to communicate with the public in a way that it works for, that is easily heard by whoever's listening, easily seen by who's ever watching. And so are we making sure that we have audio equipment? Because we've had some problems with audio. I know we've been using some hodgepodge stuff, but still, I'd rather be overdue audio to make sure that it's being heard and it's clear by all the directors. And at some point, it doesn't even matter if we ever get to the point where we're all on the same leg again, we still have staff and legal that will be talking from over in here. Are we going to have the microphones that we need to be able to cover the whole thing? And are we sure of that? Because the cost of a microphone is almost nothing in comparison to the whole package. I would rather overkill than underkill with regards to clarity and being able to be heard by the public.
Absolutely. So I've been working with Ronnie and Tiffany on that. We're not quite sure yet if this microphone system will actually be sufficient to be picked up by the soundbar. So we will be testing that. If not, we'll be adding in microphones so that you can be heard.
Is it? It might be possible these microphones would actually be plugged in, or they'd be picking them up off the loudspeaker.
I was thinking off of the loudspeaker, yeah. But I'll work with Precision IT and we can look for a better solution.
And then my second concern is very similar to that, and that is our board meetings. If we're having When the community center opens up again, at some point, we're going to have bridge players, we're going to have Zumba classes, we're going to have committee meetings, we'll be back into that room that is horrible for acoustics. Something needs to be addressed. It's kind of a little bit off subject, not really. Something needs to be addressed with regards to sound dampening in there at that point.
Okay.
And I'm seeing a secondary committee, something about a secondary system. So we have a system that's going to be in that room also. Is that correct? Because
yes.
That wasn't addressed.
Yes, there is its own system in that room.
This
and so
good.
That is the backwards.
But that's part of the initial purchase.
That is part of the initial purchase.
Okay, very good.
So this package right here is what's going to be for the boardroom. This right here is the committee room sound bar. It has a camera and a microphone in it. These are the controllers, one for the committee room and one for the boardroom. So.
Thank you. Just one, but I am concerned about the quality of the sound in there. We're going to have to really do something with regards to hanging something or putting up sound deadening devices. And Michael had some ideas on that. Because you can't hear anything on the phone in there. Thank you. That's all I got.
Dina?
Yes. Yes. Ron.
Dina, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Hi, this is Ron with Precision IT. And forgive me that we're talking about audio. The audio was a little bit echoey coming through, so I wasn't sure who was just talking about overkill better rather than underkill. Just wanted to throw real quick, we tend to think the same way at our company, like from top to bottom. We do that for wireless access points because that's another thing. People get wireless, but it's barely wireless because they didn't want to buy one additional access point. We generally go for redundancy versus just the bare minimum. So I don't know if that eases your mind at all, but when we go to make sure of how many there should be in the test that we'll go through, we will be erring on the side of slight overkill, if needed.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron. That was I'm Director Graves. Thank you for the comments.
Director Callahan.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Director.
I did. So this is Michael Callahan. I did have one additional question that just popped up. So does the installation cost include any of the potential hardwiring that will be required for Ethernet access?
Ron, can you answer that? Did you hear the question?
I heard part of it. Was asking about the internet access?
Well, so what I was asking was, does the total cost include additional drops that will be necessary for network access to the unit?
It does not. As of this point, it does not.
Okay.
We have not been asked to quote any additional drops anywhere. I would imagine an on-site would be required just to double-check where exactly the equipment's going to go. There's a good chance we can work with what's already there. But to answer your question, as far as my company is concerned, we have not been asked for additional drops, quote.
And additional drops are nominal cost. I just wanted to make sure that we were aware if there would be some minor additional costs during the installation process.
Sure. Entirely possible, yes.
Let's open up to public comments. Does anyone members of the public have any comments regarding this agenda item?
Seeing that, Chair.
Okay, then we'll close public comments. Bring it back to the board for discussion.
I just want to thank you, Dina. I know you and I have been talking about this for about 6 months now, and I want to thank you for jumping in on something new and challenging and doing a really good job putting together the program. It looks like you've done your homework. Michael, appreciate your input on that also. And I'd like to make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gattone?
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, then we'll move on. F2.
Okay, I'm going to bring up our wastewater engineer, Gregory Harris, to talk to you about this sludge dredge.
Talk about sludge.
We haven't seen Greg in a while.
Hey, Greg. How you doing, buddy?
Good to see you. Network, Kevin.
Uh-huh. You like saying that word?
Sludge. Sister Sludge.
Gregory Harris, Herbert Engineering. I'm district engineer for the town of Discovery Bay. And this item is the sludge dredge at plant number 2. So you may not have known this, but we have a dredge in the district, and it pumps sludge out of lagoon number 2 into the aerobic digester before it goes to dewatering and then ultimately sludge disposal. And if you've ever been to plant 2, there's two big lagoons, and we basically run the dredge in lagoon number 1 to pump sludge out of it. And that sludge had accumulated in there for years prior to other improvements at the facilities, and we're kind of slowly pumping all that sludge out of there. The dredge we have now is about 18 years old. When we got it, it was the first model. Unit number 10 that they ever made. And then after we bought it, they kind of went out of business making that dredge. They've been doing maintenance on it and things, but it is wastewater, and it is a tough industry and tough service. And the dredge is pretty much worn out and needs to be replaced. So Veolia went out and got new prices for dredges. But there aren't a lot of small dredge manufacturers. Like, if you want to go dredge the river or the ocean, there's big, giant marine dredges. But our dredge looks like a little car that floats on the water, and it's got a little tiny pump on it. You know, there aren't a lot of those. So the original manufacturer went out of business, but another manufacturer, Crystal Foley, has been in business for 20 years. And Veolia contacted Crystal Foley. They also contacted the original dredge manufacturer, who was represented by Rockwell Engineering. So they wanted to do a sale, also went out and said, well, we'll find a dredge for you. And what they ended up doing is getting an OEM version from Crystal Foley and then marking it up and then offering it to us. And so we said, well, we would buy it from the original manufacturer. We wouldn't just take a markup on top of their equipment and do it. So the wastewater committee agreed to just stick with the original pricing from Crystal Foley. The budget cost we had in the CIP, we had $110,000 in a previously approved CIP. The final cost with all the hoses and everything has come in above that amount. It's around $144,603.20. Because we've had some overruns on this budget, we want to put a little safety factor on that, and we want to increase the CIP budget from $110,000 to $166,000. To cover any other unknowns, because we haven't got it installed yet. So far, all the equipment's there installed. Chris and Foley and Veolia are going to install it. But, you know, you can get out there and find out you need a concrete weight or you need something, and we want to make sure we got all the fluff to pick up what we might need. So the key thing is, without the dredge, we can't get sludge out of the lagoons. And we're supposed to be getting the sludge out of the lagoons under our permit. There's really no other way to do it other than drain the dredge and pay a huge cost to try and have somebody come out and pump it down. But prior to using the dredge and the solar dryers in that process, the district one time paid to pump out a sludge lagoon at plant 1. The cost was over $1 million. And it's very expensive to dispose of sludgy water, you know, which is what we have out there. So this is a much more cost-effective method to do that. And so we're requesting that we increase the budget in a previously approved CIP to cover the cost of the dredge. We purchased the dredge from Crystal Foley, and we add a small contingency to cover any unknowns with that budget. Any questions?
I mean, you call it a dredge, but it's really just a water pump, really? Is that?
Well, it's got floats, it's got pontoons, and it's got a motor and cables, and the cables drive it back and forth across the lagoon, and it's got a pump that pushes down into the sludge and then in a pump sludge. So it's designed to pump heavy, thick sludge, and that's what we pump. So I guess I call that a dredge.
And I'm sorry if you already mentioned this. What is the estimated timeline or life of a dredge?
Yeah, so about 18 years is, you know, 15 to 20 years is a typical range. They did a good job of holding up the dredge we got, considering that the manufacturer stopped making it like a year after we bought it, you know, kind of thing. So, Crystal Foley has been in business for 20 years, so we don't anticipate that happening with them.
And they can provide any parts and stuff needed to
Right, exactly. Because instead of the manufacturer, they make all the pieces, they can buy right the top or any little pieces that we need to get it done. I mean, you know, usually what you see is you got to replace the pump at some point, you know, that may be a control. But after a while, all the motors that drive it back and forth, all the controls and you know, all the other things, the floats that help the float, they'll eventually get to the point where it's just cheaper to replace the dredge than try and keep using it together.
And what is the warranty on a piece of equipment?
12 months.
12 months.
Okay. Nice.
It is
no one industry you're in.
I have no comments. I just would say that this proposal was brought to the Water Wastewater Committee last month. Ashley and I reviewed it, and we recommend that we move forward.
Let's open up to public comments. Is there any members of the public wishes to address this issue?
See, no, activity chair.
Okay, we're back to board for discussion and our motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Buteau?
Aye. Motion carries. You get your dredge.
We get
our dredge.
I'll get a picture of Dina driving.
Okay, moving on to the next agenda item, F3.
Good evening, board. Thank you. Staff has periodically received some phone calls for residents, and even though we have no power or jurisdiction over the Highway 4 Discovery Bay intersection, we've been working in the past with Caltrans to institute some sort of traffic control measures to deal with improper driving that occurs in that intersection. The current solution involves some tubes that have been installed in the intersection. We receive complaints that primarily they're not aesthetically pleasing, number one. And number two, they become confusing to drivers with drivers that are eastbound on State Route 4, wishing to turn left, northbound onto Discovery Bay Boulevard, and actually turn into the southbound lanes. I personally witnessed this myself. We've received those complaints periodically, and we've referred them to Assemblymember Frazier's office. It's my understanding that he no longer is the chair of the Transportation Committee. So at last board meeting, we received public comment on this from Frank Morgan, who had indicated that he had been in touch with Caltrans, and that Caltrans is willing to take a second look at the intersection if the board would write a letter making that request. What I've done is written a sample letter for the board's consideration to be sent to Caltrans asking for a second look at that intersection. That concludes my presentation.
No clarifying question. I'll have some comments.
I have a clarifying question, if that's all right. So just to have them look at this, we are under let me see if I can word this right. Just by asking them to take another look, we are not asking them to take action. We're simply saying, take another look at it and see if there's anything else that you would recommend that could be done without us actually recommending that they are doing anything, even though we don't have jurisdiction over it.
Yes,
okay.
To put it succinctly.
I just wanted to make it clear.
We're not making any recommendation that they
okay.
do anything. What we are recommending is take a fresh set of eyes on this, take a look at it, and if you can find something, an alternative that is safer. More efficient,
mm-hmm.
and more pleasingly aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
we would be interested in you considering that.
Good. Okay.
Can I tack a question onto that? So if they take a look at that, does that come back to the board for those recommendations, or can they do whatever they want at that
point? Caltrans can do whatever they want.
So it may be good, it may be bad?
Yes.
That's what they did last time. They went out and did a couple things that we had no idea was happening, and all of a sudden these delineators showed up. They've been effective. They've stopped people from doing what we didn't want them to do. I would hope, since we were initiating it, of course we initiated it last time, that maybe they would come back. And the fact that they know that we have aesthetics in mind, that before they make a decision, they would at least say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. They don't have to ask our permission. It's not our street, but it is our town. So we would hope that that would be the direction. And I'm sure that Mike, as the general manager, will be in contact with them on a throughout the process. And he is very well aware of how we feel about it. Anyway, I don't want to discuss it.
My email address and telephone number is contained within the letter. So hopefully they will contact me, but nothing compels them to do so.
Even though they are not obligated to contact us, tell us what they want to do. Should we actually put in the letter, we look forward to seeing what you know, to really let them know loud and clear that we would like to see what they're planning. And they may or may not do it, but...
Well, we have it here. We would appreciate outreach with the town's general manager, Michael Davies, by emailing, and I put my email and my phone number.
Okay, do you think that's...
Okay.
Let's go ahead and open up to public comment unless there's any more clarifying questions from the board. Any members of the public wish to address this issue? I know we received some correspondence via email from a resident.
Yes, this is Frank Morgan. Good evening. I wanted to thank Mr. Davies and his staff for putting the letter together and request that the board support the letter, so Caltrans can evaluate safer and more aesthetically pleasing alternatives to the current delineator configuration at the main entrance to our community. With that said, I will relinquish my remaining time to the board since I ran over my 3 minutes.
Thanks, Frank. Any other members of the club wish to address the board in this matter?
Seeing none, sir.
Bring it back then to the board. Do we need to make a motion? Is this a motionable item?
Yes, it would be a motion to allow the board president to sign the letter as proposed and to mail it off to Caltrans.
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, please.
So I think it runs along the same line that Director Callahan was concerned about it, and also the letter from Bill Helfrich. And I've actually had this discussion with Frank about it, that first and foremost is that we want to make sure that we continue the safety of what's there. The problem is that solution is causing another safety issue, and that's those yellow delineators that are there. They're guiding people in a direction that's confusing if you don't live here, and I think that should be addressed. But I'm also careful in making sure that something doesn't occur which causes more traffic on the boulevard by changing the lanes, eliminating a turn lane, or some other possibility that's going to cause more congestion or inconvenience to the town. In other words, the town shouldn't be inconvenienced because the people in Stockton don't know how to stay on the street. I shouldn't say it that way, but I just did. And so that's my concern. My concern is that we don't end up with a problem. That we end up with a problem that gets solved in a way that's not what we intended. So that would be my only comment. Other than that, I think the letter's great. I think it's going to open up dialogue, and we'll hope that the powers that be decide they want to talk to the powers that be instead of making a unilateral decision.
And staff would just like to point out that Frank Morgan contributed quite a bit to the drafting of this letter, and that we appreciate that.
Absolutely. That's all I have.
I think personally it's a worth the risk to move forward and see if there's other options available to us. So certainly my opinion is that I'm in support of the letter. The board wants to...
Make a motion.
There you go.
That our town manager sign the letter?
The board president sign it.
No, you sign it. Brian, our board president. Sorry.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gattell?
Aye. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, Frank, and thanks, Mike, for that.
Okay, then we will move on to item number four.
Okay.
No, item four.
All right. At the January 28th, 2021 Board of Directors meeting, Contra Costa, Project Manager Will Nelson, introduced his presentation to the Board of Directors regarding Contra Costa's long-term planning. This presentation was titled Contra Costa Envision 2040, and this updates their the county's general plan for long-term development and land use. During the presentation, Mr. Nelson discussed future land use and zoning at the following Discovery Bay locations. The vacant lot at the corner of Discovery Bay Boulevard and Clipper Drive, and the vacant lot on the corner of Discovery Bay Boulevard and Sandpoint Road. Staff is bringing this item back to the board to receive your thoughts and feedback on the future land use at these two locations. The responses tonight will be assimilated into a letter and sent to County Planner and Envision 2040 Project Manager Will Nelson. I'd like to open this forum up for board discussion.
So currently it's zoned as commercial, correct?
Commercial.
Both of them.
I believe it is. I have not gotten a clear response back from the county, but I believe it is commercial. So
this is multi-family over here across the way.
I don't think it is. I know they wanted to make it a multi-family, but I don't think it's
so multi-use.
Multi-use, but
that was the proposed. Was multi-use, I believe, if I'm accurate on that.
What's that?
I believe that the proposal was to go multi-use
from
commercial.
From commercial.
Boy, I don't know. Hoffman was in here 8 years ago with the showing townhouses over there, but maybe they never rezoned it. I was in the impression it was already zoned for that because they already had plans drawn up for it. But I may be wrong.
No, Mike's correct. It is zoned commercial, and Hoffman did come up with a proposal. But part of the proposal was rezoning it to allow for the multi-use.
Are we open for discussion? Yeah. Is that where we're?
Clarify questions? Do any public comments regarding this?
No. Staff has a couple of thoughts.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Brian, being a realtor,
what is your... Madam
Chair. Okay. Go ahead, Carol.
What is your thoughts?
As far as... There's a lot to take into consideration, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of information that we don't have as far as an understanding of how busy the boulevard really is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we have any traffic studies to look at. What the real demand would look like,
mm-hmm.
given the current market situation.
So I have a question. What did Will say they were going to, did he say it was going to be rezoned?
Yeah, he brought up that they've been getting calls, and he said, what do you all think about that?
Rezoned for
rezoning
multi-use.
Multi-use.
That was in his draft proposal that he presented.
The 2040 plan or whatever?
Yeah.
For both places?
No, he talked about townhouses across the street from the steakhouse, and then over here.
Was live work?
Yes.
And potentially, how many units are we talking here? Are we talking, 100 more units or 500? So.
Well, I mean, ideally, I talked to a number of people about this just to get different, and it was interesting because I did get varying comments. But one thing that was constant was the concern of the looks of the entry into Discovery Bay. And there's no guarantee of the townhouses, what they would look like, how they would be kept up, what the additional traffic in and out of there, what that would do. But then other people that I talked to, as far as having live work across the street here, people were all for it. I think that's a fine idea. So leaving the corner across the street from the steakhouse commercial, but changing this.
I think there's some concerns that we probably maybe need to discuss or think about. I think anytime you add more homes, that adds more people, more traffic. We already have some pretty major concerns with how we're supported through fire and safety. And, you know, you multiply that by however many people, that's adding a whole different realm of responsibility and concerns that we may or may not be able to incur. If you leave it commercial, it's bringing in revenue and and different aspects of the community that isn't going to stress the core of how the community functions as much as multi-units.
Well, from a revenue standpoint, none of that revenue comes to us. It all goes to the town.
I understand, but I mean, you get exposure in a different way.
Aaron, do we have any, are those lots counted for in any of our estimates for future growth? Multiple residential units at either location? I think that's right. I think we have commercial.
I don't think it's counted as multiple units, but that lot is counted. So,
but it's currently on a commercial basis, though. So it's more like a steakhouse counting, not a multifamily where we're going to have more water, more sewer than we have currently in our master plan.
Correct.
So that's a concern, is that we don't, it's not part of our capacity.
I don't think it would be in our master plan as housing units or multifamily.
Right, so if we put in 120 units here and another 80 units down there and added 200 more residents, that's not something that's currently in our plan. And I think that would be a major concern. That we would have to address, but personally, I look at it as we already have. Clipper is a little bit challenging already for traffic coming out on a Discovery Boulevard. It's I don't do it all the time, so I don't see it as big. But two of our directors do it every day, so they see it differently than I do, and. So I think that's a real issue with regards to traffic coming out on the Clipper and then on the Discovery Bay Boulevard. And what we're going to create is another log jam at the entrance and exit to Discovery Bay. And you know, we're in a unique situation right now where we don't have traffic problems. But at 8 o'clock and 7:30 in the morning, the street, it's backed up way past Clipper with people taking their kids to school and everything else. That's just, if you put more people right there in that thing, I don't know how you would mitigate the traffic issues. And again, this county has not been really good about mitigating the traffic issues here that we've asked them about in the past. We keep building homes, but we're not increasing the entrance and the exit to Discovery Bay. And I'm addressing Highway 4 at this point. There's no plans to widen. When they put up a bridge, they make it narrow enough that you can't put two more lanes in. I don't feel that the county has done much to mitigate the traffic problems that we have in and around Discovery Bay, and I would be concerned about adding more population for that.
If I could just add an additional comment, there definitely is a shortage of housing right now. The real estate market is very trying here in Discovery Bay. There's 29 homes on the market, and normally we have about 150. So from a real estate standpoint, certainly we definitely have a demand for more housing. It's something that we might also consider, keep in mind, is there might be some unintended consequences by rezoning. If it's rezoned into a townhouse or something multi-unit, it doesn't mean that necessarily it still could be a leased or month-to-month type situation. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't guarantee that it's going to be an owned by a resident. So,
this may not be the right house.
Well, if an apartment complex comes in and they're on a month-to-month and it's 300 units, something
to
mind.
We have a recommendation.
Instead of discussing what we want the property to be used for, maybe we could approach it from a standpoint of what would the board like the county planner to bear in mind. And some of the points that you made were traffic mitigation. The letter could state that the town of Discovery Bay would like the planner to consider zoning that reflects a use that has limited impact on the already congested traffic at both locations.
And the way to water, wastewater, we can add that to that. That would be great because that's a genuine, and that's our primary function, and it needs to be addressed as not being part of anything that we have planned for as the capacities in our current water wastewater system. And that would definitely make it cost prohibitive to, or could make it cost prohibitive to a developer to have to mitigate that somehow.
I think we need to address the fire
and the safety issues. Yeah,
we don't have either one of those here, and you add 300 more people plus, how are we going to handle that?
So if we, would you like the general manager to draft a letter reflecting those items and send it off to Will Nelson at the county? That's what we're looking for.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would make a motion that that staff prepare a letter and convey the board's desires to the county planner.
Second. Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gatoke?
Aye. Well, curious. Thank you, staff. That's what we have here. Always had good ideas. Okay, then we'll move forward with F5.
Okay, I'm going to bring up Maddie, the executive assistant, to discuss the, I think, our COVID plan.
Good evening, board members. So, the district is required to have a current employee injury and illness prevention policy in place. On January 1st, 2021, Cal OSHA imposed a new safety standard and regulation obligating public employers to create and implement a COVID-19 prevention program, or CPP, to protect employees from COVID-19 in the workplace. At the February 3rd, 2021 Internal Ops Committee meeting, staff presented a working draft of the updated CPP to the committee and was asked to make some minor provisions to share with the full board tonight. A draft of the updated CPP is provided to you as agenda item number F5 for you to review and provide possible feedback on. Staff is asking for a motion to approve the COVID-19 prevention program to be added as section 10.0 to our existing IIPP, or the Illness Injury and Prevention Program, as proposed. This concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions at this time. Thank you.
Does the board have any clarifying questions? Any members of the public wish to address this agenda item?
Seeing no activity, Chair.
I'll bring back the board for discussion and or motion.
Make a motion that we accept the addition of the COVID-19 prevention program into our IIPP.
I'll second.
Yeah, I don't, this virus isn't going any place, so that's sure that's why it's being mandated.
Director Graham? Around.
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gatoke?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're doing a good job. Perfect.
Nice job on that, Maddie.
Oh, thank you.
Moving forward to F5.
Okay, I'm going to bring in Parks and Landscape Manager Bill Engelman. He's going to discuss.
F6, sorry.
That's okay. He's going to discuss with you Prop 68 statewide program, competitive grant vision that the community came up with.
Good evening.
Hey, Bill.
So I know I've been the spokesperson for the grant since we started, but I want to point out that Monica's done a wonderful driving force in keeping the timeline in place, getting all the pieces we needed together. So what I'd like to do this evening is just give a summation about the process and the dialogue regarding the community-based planning meetings we've had so far. So, as we mentioned at our prior meetings, the site along Clipper Drive was chosen as it's the only town-owned property that met the less than 2 acres per 1,000 resident threshold. And as we know, it does need a major facelift. The meetings we've held throughout the past couple of months have had three distinct goals. One, the community has to select the recreation features, the location of the features on the site, and the other, design, beautification, safety, and public art ideas. Thank you. So we were required to hold 5 community-based planning meetings. We've held 6 so far. Tonight will be our 7th, with the goal of getting some more input from the board and the public as well. So what I'll do is I'll present the entirety of the community vision, but I'll also present the amenities that the staff feels most appropriate for the site based on safety, site constraints, and maintenance. Before we get into the vision, I'd like to mention the existing conditions and how they play a role in defining the practicality of some of these site amenities the community has chosen. I think we all know the landscape condition of the Clipper Drive site, but I want to point out its dimensions and constraints. It is a half a mile long, 40-foot in width, and it has a residential scale walking path. It's narrow in spots and has some traffic and safety concerns, but these constraints that have been addressed, and I don't want to deter that from this mission. So what we are attempting is similar to other projects that have been awarded through Prop 68, and many projects you may have seen in an urban environment using streetscape design principles. As you can see in these images, these sites are very similar in site constraints, yet usable and beautiful space. So this is what the community is kind of envisioning. I'll run through the slides of the amenities that were presented at the meetings. So this one is exercise equipment, came up a lot. Outdoor game tables, benefiting the health and social aspects of the community. Alright, so the youth. The youth actually played a large role in our meetings, giving them a scaled-down version of some of these skateboard rail areas, bike path offshoots from the normal walking path. Again, creating opportunities for intergenerational socialization. All-inclusive play. Again, as part of the grant process, very important to offer the entirety of our population additional opportunities for recreation and socialization. Seating, the inclusion of several types of seating arrangements would be beneficial. Benches near paths, benches and tables in seclusion, the addition of seat walls for both landscape opportunity and safety. What do we do with the retaining wall? Big topic in the community in the discussion. Seeing that we don't own it, possibility of a combination of art panels and vegetation, creating a nice backdrop and offering screening for the residents that are behind that site. Lighting, both pedestrian scale point lighting with additional bollard lighting, providing, again, safety and beautification. And then, of course, uniform trash, recycle, and doggy stations. Art, using gateway structures to the site, having the school community involved with art installation. In addition, using environmental techniques like bioswales, drought-tolerant landscaping, efficient irrigation that assists in our environmental health. Now, I'm not going to go read this list in details, but this is the entirety of the amenities that the community has come up with, roughly separated into park, landscape, and recreation amenities. Now, remembering back to our existing conditions and constraints, so there are some constraints and concerns, and we went ahead and discussed a lot of these topics at some of our community meetings, so we can get input on the community's concern as well. So this is a list of the vision that the community would like to see implemented at Clipper Drive. Again, based on both community and staff input with regards to safety, maintenance, and site constraints, this list here, as we feel, is how the community would like to proceed. So I can open it up to the board and the public, questions, comments, concerns, and then an approval to move forward with this vision so we can continue our pursuit.
I think this is exciting. All right. The things listed, I think, are things when you, like, living across from this area and watching all of the different people that are walking on there, the different parts of our community that are in there, it's you know, different age levels, different activities. I think this fits within what that's looking for. And I like that it's addressed all different parts of our community. Well done.
I think it's wonderful that we were able to develop enough interest in the community to get all these wonderful ideas, and I'm really pleased with what you and Monica have done to get community input to move forward with those meetings and get good attendance. I think I heard that the attendance was increased as we went forward, as people heard about the meetings, and we got some really great responses, and there's a lot more things up there than I would have thought about, so I think it's wonderful.
Sorry to interrupt. About how many responses did we get?
How many people were at the meetings?
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere from 5 to 18-ish, maybe?
An average of about 10.
Yeah.
So,
about, you know, a lot of that. Yeah.
So,
a lot of them were youth, which was really
cool. So 50, 70 people, and did you get emails and any calls? And
Monica got several emails, I believe, from other residents who weren't at the meetings.
Some people couldn't go,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And we would add that to the list.
Excellent. Excellent. That's great.
Okay. Any public comments?
Are you looking for a motion on this, or do we move to
senior activity chair?
I do have a question.
Okay.
One comment that was made to me by a number of people initially and is the concern about safety. And I know the speed bumps, and I know, you know, that's an issue. And I, as I understand it, that has come up year after year as far as having something on Clipper to try to slow our speeders down. But since we are going to be doing this, can we talk to the county and have something installed? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, and I did bring this up at some of the community
mm-hmm.
meetings, is, you know, if we do get this grant and we're putting in this beautiful
mm-hmm.
new park, maybe that's the catalyst to go to the county and say, hey, you know, look at what we've done here. Now, can we increase the safety, please, of the traffic concerns? So that's my thought.
You know, I don't know if we would need a crosswalk anywhere getting to it or having, I know we can't do the speed bumps, and it was brought up that the flashing yellow light may be annoying for some people, but I know in some towns they have so you're driving along a road, and all of a sudden there's like a strip, and I don't know what they call it, of yellow lights on the road, actually, so,
okay.
You know, kind of saying slow down. And so then that wouldn't be glaring in anyone's window or anything. But, yeah, I would certainly think we would want to really jump and push to make, to, you know, solve, to make this new fabulous park safe for everyone and hopefully stop that ongoing issue of speeding on.
Does the grant have any of the any of that involved? Does it go? Does the grant application involve any county involvement in the road surrounding the potential?
So no, this would be a
separate
issue versus our issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that is something. Should we get this approved, we could immediately start the ball rolling. And now what, so after this, how long will it, do you guess it'll take before we get?
So the timeline is March 12th is the grant deadline. So we have all our information by then. Decision will be made in August on whether or not we receive funding.
August.
Yeah. Okay. And then I envision a design phase with a design firm and then construction probably in fall of 2022.
So, I'm sorry, say that again. So our deadline to get this to them is
March 12th.
And when do they make a decision?
In August.
Okay. I know you just said that. But
do you,
I knew that I wasn't paying attention, so I needed to ask.
And do we have any idea of how many other towns and cities are going after this? Is it huge?
It is competitive.
Mm-hmm.
We are slightly at a disadvantage because we don't meet the disadvantaged community income
mm-hmm.
lines. But so we're extra vigilant in the other opportunities.
Okay.
Well, I'd just like to echo some of the comments already made. Kudos to you and to Monica. You guys did a fantastic job. I think the list is amazing. Coming from the Park and Rec, there's stuff on there that I'm like, wow, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Seeing the community involvement, and hey, all we can do is apply for it and see what happens. And
yeah, I think it's fabulous. Absolutely.
I think it's very exciting.
And just one more thing, Brian, if I could.
Please.
President Coteau, sorry. As we go through this, as we probably go through the grant application process, are we building this in a way that if for some reason we were not selected for the grant, that some of these ideas could possibly be incorporated going forward?
Exactly. So there's no reason pieces of these can't move forward if we don't get the grant, right? So
as I recall, we had plans to address Clipper. We put them on hold.
Yeah.
Because of the grant, obviously we can't afford to do everything that we're asking for through the grant, but we will then readdress Clipper if we're not successful in getting the grant and seeing what we can do. And now we have some great community ideas to work with on top of it.
So it's a great exercise regardless.
Regardless, great exercise.
So I'd make a motion that we accept staff's report on this and that we move forward with the resolution with the verbiage as stated.
That's the next item. This is just approving to move forward with the
vision. Oh, you're right. I've moved ahead one item. What are we approving? Your report? What's the motion on this?
Approving these amenities, this vision, so we can. Because the grant states that they really don't want you to put things into the grant that you're really not going to put in the park.
Oh, okay.
So
you feel those are all obtainable?
These are obtainable based on safety and maintenance.
Then I would make a motion that we accept the report with the amenities as indicated, and that that is the desire of the board.
Second. Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Coteau?
Aye, absolutely.
Thanks.
Now we're going to discuss...
Do we need to discuss it, or can we just...
Okay, so now that I've gone over the recap of the meetings, so another requirement for the grant submission is to have a resolution passed, which serves two purposes. One, it provides confirmation that the applicant has the funding to complete the proposed project, if it is awarded. And two, it designates an authorized representative to represent the governing body on all matters regarding the application and project. Now, in reference to point one on the resolution, the funding language can be interpreted a couple ways. So A, it could read, we have sufficient funds to front the cost of the project before receiving progress payment back. Or it could read B, we have enough funds to complete a project if we can fund the difference in the cost of the project minus the grant funds awarded. So if our project was $2 million, but we only awarded $1.5 million, could we make up the $500,000 difference? Now, we've spoken with our grant rep, and she reads it as the first interpretation, but if you dig further into the administration wording, it could be interpreted as bland. But regardless, the wording in the resolution comes from the grant application, so it can't be changed. And we're under no obligation to move forward with an award if we choose not to and haven't signed anything otherwise. So we do have to have this resolution passed to move forward. So we recommend approval of resolution 2021-04.
So just for clarification, if we were awarded a grant that didn't meet the costs of the plan that we put forward, we could deny the grant. Because, I mean, that's just, I can't believe it'd be number two, because what you're saying is you're going to agree to a cost that you have no idea what it is. And so I'm believing that it was interpreted correctly, but I just want to clarify that we're not backing ourselves into a
corner.
Into a legal
absolutely.
Corner.
And remembering these grants are typically for a large portion of disadvantaged communities, so a lot of those communities don't have that funding mechanism to create
things. Did you say... Okay, there it is. Item 4, I was looking for that. Okay, very good.
Any other clarification? Clarifying question, excuse me? How about public comments?
Seeing no activity, Chair.
Bring back to board.
Make the motion that we accept resolution 2021-04.
A second.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gatto?
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, thank you.
And Monica?
You're welcome.
Yeah, good job. Very impressive.
Very well done. Thanks
very impressive.
For getting us to this point.
Mm-hmm. I'll get the grant.
Now that the easy part's done.
Do we have any manager reports? General manager reports?
Not tonight.
Director reports?
Yes, you do. I attended two regional meetings. One was the Liberty Union High School Board meeting. And mostly just to introduce myself. But everybody handles meetings differently. And after getting on the Zoom call, they then said, if there's any public comment, you needed to present yourself 30 minutes before the meeting started. Didn't know that ahead of time, but was able to. So I wasn't able to make any comments or introductions, but nonetheless was able to listen to their meeting in depth. And really the focus of the conversation is, when are the kids going to go back to school? Mm-hmm. That's what all the public comments were about. That's really what the parents are concerned about. The good news is sports are back. At least that's what they said in the meeting. And they also discussed Black History Month. And then the second meeting was the fire district. The fire district meeting is more in-depth detail of what we kind of receive, except that there was a very interesting point that was brought up. Even though they are very confident that there is going to be a consolidation of districts, they're still moving ahead with a redesign of the board, which affects us, because currently it's 5 members at large. They're going to be changing that, even though it may not be a board anymore, but they have to move forward as if it is going to be, and where it's going to be regional, it's going to be, what am I trying to say, district-driven. District-driven. So in other words, Discovery Bay will have a representative along with however they're going to break it out. And the reason they're doing this is because of the 2020 census. They have numbers now that they can use to divide it up. Currently, I think all the representation occurs out of 2 cities, and it doesn't really represent the counties that well. And so it would give us a little bit more of a voice with some of the other unincorporated areas in Discovery Bay, and we could actually have a director that would live in Discovery Bay, which would be kind of nice. So I thought that was interesting. And I will turn in my written reports as requested, or as mandated, and that's all I have.
Any other director reports? Did I ask for public comments on this director report?
No. That's not it.
I don't know.
Any future agenda items?